el gobierno, su camino inevitable hacia el triunfo en la guerra, es lo que finalmente ha generado las condiciones para que esta mesa se instale. Sobre ese supuesto, sobre esa constatación, es que los representantes de la oposición en esta mesa de diálogo tienen las condiciones para avanzar. Hay un gobierno constituido que ha triunfado en las últimas elecciones, que está proponiendo, entre otras cosas, la creación de un gobierno de unidad nacional, y no son muchos los recursos del otro grupo, del grupo que representa a la oposición, para poder avanzar en una dirección distinta. Es quizás por eso que se buscan otras vías, como la de la operación mediática o como la de la generación de hechos de violencia, para poder finalmente torpedear y cambiar en esta mesa condiciones que en el territorio sirio están establecidas de manera muy clara. Hay que recordar que Estados Unidos, en sus declaraciones mediáticas, había anunciado su fuerte compromiso con el establecimiento de la paz. Incluso al principio de este conflicto había hecho un planteamiento de una supuesta neutralidad que nunca fue tal. Se ha producido en dos niveles. Por un lado, el financiamiento, el apoyo directo o indirecto a las fuerzas de oposición, incluso indirectamente a los grupos terroristas para que participen de la guerra. En paralelo está haciendo el planteamiento de la paz, pero resulta evidente que la entrada decidida en la escena de Rusia, su voluntad de crear una coalición con Irak, con Irán y con Siria, es lo que finalmente ha generado las condiciones para poder avanzar en el terreno de la paz. Es decir, en pocos meses, esta coalición impulsada por Rusia ha hecho mucho más por la paz que lo que retóricamente ha hecho Estados Unidos. Da la impresión que el verdadero interés de Estados Unidos no es la paz, sino el derrocamiento del gobierno de Bashar al-Assad para poder avanzar en el control geopolítico sobre la región completa, sobre la región completa de Medio Oriente, y particularmente para aumentar el asedio sobre Irán. Es muy difícil concebir que se pueda generar algún tipo de acuerdo sobre grupos que están basando su actuar en las conductas más deleznables, y con esto hablo particularmente de ISIS, pero no solo de ISIS. Por lo tanto, es correcta la distinción que se ha exigido entre aquellos grupos de la oposición que están comprometidos con un proceso que efectivamente incluya a la totalidad de la pluralidad de la sociedad siria, y nuestros otros grupos que queden excluidos. Ahora, dicho esto, la oposición siria que está participando de la mesa tiene que partir sobre la base de que tiene que establecer una ruptura clara con estos otros grupos, porque una de las grandes preguntas que están en el aire y sobre las cuales hay hipótesis bastante fundamentadas, es que en estricto rigor estos grupos de oposición siguen teniendo algún tipo de alianza táctica con los grupos que actúan más violentamente, y entonces sobre esa base es muy difícil avanzar. En algún momento da la impresión que se unen todos, que lo que realmente importa es el derrocamiento de Bashar al-Assad y no efectivamente el aislamiento de estos grupos extremistas. Es bastante probable que el modo en que decanten las cosas vaya en la misma dirección de lo que hemos conocido hasta ahora, es decir, los avances irrefutables del ejército sirio en el plano militar, en el control territorial del país, son los que finalmente van a rayar la cancha para definir el modo en que se va a dar el diálogo en general y en particular en las posibilidades de maniobra que tenga esta oposición que está participando en Ginebra.
Por otro lado, oficiales de Moscú proponen cambios que pudieran llevar a un proceso más acelerado para lograr la paz en Siria.
El canciller de la Federación Rusa, Sergei Lavrov, declaró que se debe impedir la participación de los extremistas en el proceso negociador sobre Siria, e hizo énfasis en que no se debe permitir que en el Congreso político entren círculos extremistas de las organizaciones proscritas por el Consejo de Seguridad de la ONU. De este modo, el diplomático estableció que las disposiciones de la Organización de Naciones Unidas, máximas instancias de auspicio en las conversaciones, son el criterio a seguir para diferenciar a los opositores sirios de los que optaron por el camino del terrorismo y el extremismo, situación que desde el principio ha sido un impedimento para el avance de las negociaciones. Por otra parte, el denominado Alto Comité de Negociaciones de la Oposición Siria insiste en imponer el tema de la transición política y desestima que el combate al terrorismo sea prioritario en las actuales consultas, dejando de este modo abierta la interpretación el límite tolerable en el comportamiento de las fuerzas que combaten contra el gobierno legítimo de Siria.
Por su parte, la congresista demócrata norteamericana Tulsi Gabbard pide a su gobierno dejar de apoyar de manera directa o indirecta a los colectivos armados que trabajan bajo las órdenes o para los grupos terroristas.
Nuestro gobierno ha prestado apoyo directo y indirecto durante años a estos grupos armados que trabajan directamente con o bajo el mando de grupos terroristas como Al-Qaeda y el Estado Islámico, los cuales luchan con mucho esfuerzo para derrocar al gobierno sirio.
En Colombia, los combatientes de la guerrilla de las FARC entran en la fase de entregación de las armas para luego convertirse en una formidable fuerza política del país. El licenciado Alejo Rivera es miembro de la organización Poder Ciudadano.
Yo creo que es importante que se inicie el registro del armamento de la insurgencia colombiana, y esto deja sin piso a aquellos que dijeron que las FARC no tenía la voluntad de entregar las armas cuando se dio el plebiscito. Y por otro lado, es un día histórico, ya que se reconoce la naturaleza política del conflicto colombiano y la posibilidad de que exista un actor distinto en nuestra democracia. Que las FARC llegue a la vida política con un partido y un movimiento político demuestra lo escaso que era nuestra democracia, y que el proceso de paz lo que está abriendo es la posibilidad para nuevas voces y nuevos actores en la política colombiana. Y también desmiente lo que mucha gente dijo por bastante tiempo, que las FARC eran narcotraficantes y que eran una banda de criminales. Demuestra lo que es una guerrilla fortalecida en lo político y que va a jugar con una opción de poder real, tanto en el 2018 en el Senado y Cámara como en la presidencia. Pero también este partido permitirá dinamizar otras formas de participación ciudadana, como la protesta y la movilización social, porque muchos piensan que es esta reforma se hace y esta posibilidad es para que las FARC tengan solamente senadores. Por eso se habla también de un centro de pensamiento, porque las FARC entienden la política como un contexto mucho más allá de la representación liberal de ir al Congreso para tener una representación. Aquí lo importante es que este acuerdo lo firma el gobierno y las FARC, pero esto es un proyecto y un pacto político, una nueva realidad política que debe ser asumida por todos los colombianos. Que se garantice la implementación de lo acordado y que no se quede en el papel depende en parte de las FARC, de su voluntad, pero depende de que el pueblo colombiano lo exija, porque vemos un gobierno que no cumple, a pesar de que las FARC se mantiene su voluntad. Falta muchísimo construcción de la vivienda, de los servicios públicos en las zonas, y a pesar de eso las FARC se mantienen. Entonces tenemos un temor, y es que si la ciudadanía no apropia estos acuerdos como suyo, si no cumplen hoy cuando las FARC aún tienen las armas en su poder, ¿cómo será posteriormente la dejación de las mismas? Es una preocupación importante que tenemos muchos sectores acá en Colombia de la sociedad, de que el gobierno, después de la entrega de las armas, empiece con una dinámica y una, digamos que una velocidad mucho más lenta que lo está haciendo hoy. Entonces aquí el reto no es solamente que se entreguen las armas, hay un afán porque se entreguen las armas. Aquí lo que hay que generar es las condiciones para la reincorporación de la insurgencia, no solamente a la vida política, sino civil y económica, porque no podemos llevar a estos 7.000 guerrilleros que han dado una lucha en Colombia, ahora que empiecen a engrosar las filas del desempleo, las calles de Colombia, como vemos todo el tiempo, sino que tiene que ser una reincorporación digna, y el gobierno tiene que entender que es parte de lo que se ha acordado en la mesa de negociaciones y que quedó pactado en el acuerdo. Entonces, esa es la preocupación que tenemos. Existe el respaldo de la comunidad internacional, pero solamente los colombianos movilizados vamos a poder hacer de que estos acuerdos sean una realidad y que no solamente se queden en el papel. Vemos que hay sectores fuertes del uribismo que tienen miedo de que llegue otro actor al Congreso, porque las FARC representan efectivamente algo nuevo en la política, tanto electoral como pública en Colombia. Es un actor que por más de 50 años ha actuado en la vida política a través de las armas, y que hoy lo va a hacer a través de unas voces. Vemos que lo de Voces de Paz ha tenido una aceptación, que es un sinnúmero de dirigentes que han venido abriendo espacio al tránsito de la vida política de las FARC. Y yo creo que si hay sectores de la oligarquía en Colombia que temen de que las FARC van a ser un partido nacional con una amplia militancia consciente que está por fuera del clientelismo, la burocratización y la corrupción de la política en Colombia, y eso tiene que darle miedo al establecimiento colombiano, ya que es un partido, digamos que cohesionado y con militantes en todo el país. Entonces yo creo que las FARC sí tienen una posibilidad real de construir poder hacia el futuro, y a eso es que le temen. Pero yo creo que en la medida que la ciudadanía adopte el proceso como suyo y que las FARC puedan llegar a ese 70% de colombianos que hoy no participan, podemos creer que Colombia puede transitar hacia un mejor camino y hacia una democracia real, que es lo que no hay en este país.
El papel de los medios de comunicación corporativos y sus imitadores promoviendo las intervenciones militares de los Estados Unidos y sus aliados, como en el caso de Siria hoy día, no es nada nuevo, dice la analista Laila Techeldain. Algo similar hicieron para preparar la opinión pública internacional antes de la invasión y destrucción de Libia, acota la investigadora.
Realmente hemos visto que de forma, y bueno, y al margen de la ética que deben de llevar los periodistas y los medios de comunicación, pues hemos visto que han sido columna vertebral para amilanar, para amañar las mentes y la opinión pública de los pueblos en general y justificar las guerras. Es la forma como los medios de comunicación, así lo hicieron en el caso de Libia, es uno de los ejemplos más cercanos que nosotros tenemos de cómo descaradamente los medios de comunicación se pusieron en una componenda para justamente la opinión pública mundial pudiese justificar lo que sería una acción realmente con intereses económicos y con la intención de lograr el control y una rehegemonización del territorio libio y así parte del norte de África. Son muchas las anécdotas que se pueden decir en el caso libio y también nos las pueden contar muy bien los corresponsales que envió precisamente Telesur, donde muchos cuentan que periodistas ni siquiera salían de los cuartos del hotel y siempre inventaban y sacaban a la luz pública una historia para mantener justamente esa opinión pública despierta y también pudieran generarles entre ellos una matriz de que era necesario derrocar al presidente y al líder libio Muammar al-Gaddafi. Aquí estamos viendo que es una acción realmente al margen del derecho internacional, cuyos principios son el respeto a la idiosincrasia, la autodeterminación de los pueblos, ya que cada pueblo elige su estilo y su forma de gobierno. En el caso del mundo árabe también estamos viendo que los medios han promovido lo que ha sido una islamofobia y justamente como también la forma de justificar ese proceso de guerras, que también de las que solamente sacan provecho las grandes corporaciones de la guerra, de las armas, que realmente son muy bien beneficiadas en Estados Unidos. Estas guerras no convencionales también donde se puede enmascarar Estados Unidos. Aquí en América Latina nosotros estamos viendo algo similar. No en este caso están promoviendo el tema de la islamofobia, pero sí están promoviendo el supuesto respeto de los derechos humanos y justamente lo está promoviendo Estados Unidos y las corporaciones mediáticas que avalan la política de Estados Unidos, y estamos hablando de ese país que precisamente ha sido el principal promotor y violador de los derechos humanos de las poblaciones, porque no podemos olvidar que no solamente se violó en Libia el derecho a la soberanía de ese pueblo, de derecho internacional de ese pueblo, sino es que también se violaron los derechos de los pueblos que habitan o del pueblo que habita en esa nación, el derecho a la vida, el derecho a la autodeterminación.
Aquí concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de todos los medios y personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Toshi y de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Hello everyone, this is Camilo Mejía, war resistor, conscientious objector, pacifist, political activist, and former political prisoner. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz on 101 FM.
what's coming up until we again get back in a studio and I have regular live broadcasts. Get in touch and stay in touch with the Huff email. You can also find out what's going on by going to the Huff website. Though usually you'll pick up the shows archived rather than the shows, I wouldn't say live, because I don't think I'm going to be doing live shows, but I will be doing new shows that will be relatively recent and hopefully will cover some recent news if I'm up to it. We'll see if I'm up to it. So welcome to another edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. Today is, of course, the 23rd of February, 2017, and, well, we're still looking for a studio, so I should kick off with that first. We're hoping to be back on the air again. We have an antenna that we're now going to try to put up now that the weather has allowed us to get up on the roof and start working with it. So that should be happening. We'll be able to put out on-the-air shows, but again, they're going to be shows without a studio. And so mostly we're talking about shows which will be, I can't think of anyone who's doing a live show, but there may be some, one or two people who have the capacity, the energy, and the expertise to do that. I don't at the moment, but who knows? Maybe I'll... No promises on wising up to do that, but I usually put out shows that are made soon, or usually a day or two, maybe hours before the broadcast time, and then they get played as a an audioed show, which you can then hear and, well, enjoy, hopefully. So I'm going to begin with a little music, and then I'm going to segue into, well, actually a few things. I spoke earlier with Wes White of Salinas of the Monterey County Homeless Union, and he's also a video journalist who comes down to Santa Cruz regularly and does videos events like various protests, various press conferences, various meetings. And I actually put out one of those today on the Huff email, the attempt to get into the police department's Sean Arlt press conference, where finally after 4 months, Chief Vogel, with the release of the DA's investigation, finding Officer Eric Bradley not chargeable with any wrongdoing for shooting dead Sean Arlt back in October. Sean was armed with a metal rake, a 5-foot-long metal rake with 2-inch prongs, and by the time he got 7 to 10 feet away and had not been stopped by, I think it was 3 taser bursts, Arlt was shot dead by Eric Bailey. And that might have been just fine, and maybe it is, but I'm wondering why they had to keep all the audio and video secret for 4 months. And there wasn't, the audio and video they did reveal was not terribly revealing. It was hardly, you could hardly see any movement at all. You couldn't distinguish Sean Arlt or the officer that shot him. You could hear the radio chatter of the police department. And I know this because they did play the audio and video at the district attorney's press conference, which I was allowed into, and subsequently it was broadcast along with the police department's press interview or press affair, which I was blocked from going into, but was later videoed and placed online on the police department's website and then reposted on Santa Cruz Indie Media. And you know that, well, there's a description. We fundamentally have a description of what happened to Sean Arlt from the voices and perspectives of the police officials. And we get to hear their supporting, well, if it's supporting, it's the narrative as, it's not even revealed, but it's the narrative as described by Chief Vogel, but then as sort of counterpointed with some audio, which Vogel sort of interprets, explains, puts into context, and so forth. You can actually see the video. I posted it today. I posted the video was posted last week or the week before, but I posted the video that Wes White made of Lieutenant Warren Berry, keeping us, myself and video journalist Wes White, out of the conference, and my protest outside that, which I don't think you can actually even hear it inside. It's kind of got pretty good soundproofing inside the Santa Cruz Community Room Police Station. So if you want to check that out, you can go to Santa Cruz Indie Media, and you can see the new video posted. And I think Wes will also be posting the press conference that he videoed of the district attorney's office. This may be going into too much detail, sort of storm and fury over very little. They didn't reveal much. They just have their own narrative and the very, very kind of limited video and audio that either was taken or at least was released. They claim it's all that was taken. And the one thing we don't get, and I think we need to get, is the full DA's investigative report. And we also need the police department's witness statements by all the officers and the squad car witness, and any surrounding statements from neighbors who either heard or saw what was going on, though we were assured by the district attorney that there were no witnesses. It seems unlikely. Well, it's quite possible, I guess, that the people inside the house who called in the Sean Arlt shooting, which, for those who don't remember, happened when a guy was having essentially a kind of a breakdown episode, pounded on the door of, "I'm going to kill you." And although the people who reported this said they knew the guy, and they sounded more just impatient the police didn't get there to take this nuisance away rather than a real fear for their lives in a kind of any immediate sense. Although they, you know, he did say he was going to arm himself with some sort of kitchen implement in case Arlt got into the house. But anyway, what I'm also going to do is I'm going to try to contact Wes White, who has a report from Salinas about what's going on there, recent city council activities there around immigration, which of course is becoming a gloomier and gloomier scene, or a more and more enraging scene, depending on how you want to respond to the trumped up Obama deportation schedules. And I again always like to preface any criticism of Trump's latest nonsense with the context, which is that it's a continuation of Democratic Party Obama policies intensified. And you don't hear the policies themselves being fundamentally attacked by the often by the people who are leading some of these protests. Though I wouldn't say that's true of the immigrant protests so much, but of other protests like the mass the women's march that happened 3 or 4 weeks ago. I think it was a week, the day after Inauguration Day, or a couple days after Inauguration Day. You don't get that. Instead, you get, let's get rid of Trump, let's get rid of Trump. In essence, bring the Democrats back, bring the Democrats back. As though their policies were really meaningfully different in kind rather than simply in degree than the Trumpism. And it's also true locally that you have our own deportees, our own emigres, our own homeless population subject to the kind of abuse, criminalization, property seizures. They don't get deported to a foreign country, but the objective is to run them out of town, although they won't say that. They'll just say, "We want you to obey the law," similar to what is said to immigrants who are saying, "These are illegal. That's why we have to get rid of them, because they're violating the law," you see. Anyway, let's see if I can get a hold of Wes White and Salinas. He may actually be trying to call me now, but let's see if I can reach him and see if we can get some updates from there. Got a ringtone. We may reach his machine, because that often is how we would have to go back and forth a bit to get to him. We'll see what happens this time. Wes White is also, for those of you who know, well, you probably do know.
This is Carol Kenny's phone machine, 548-1512.
Wow, completely wrong number. Hey, Carol, this is Robert calling from Santa Cruz.
Oh, hi, how are you?
And I should warn you, you're on free radio, so be careful.
Hello, free radio.
And I actually intended to call someone else, but I've reached you, and so by cracky, hence I've gotten through to you. I want to know what's going on up in Berkeley, if you feel like talking about it.
I wish I could tell you. I've been sick, so I don't really know what's happening out there.
Oh, boy, and I'm right rousting you from your sick bed here.
I know I sound like Minnie Mouse.
No, you sound like a little old lady who's gotten up. And
that's pretty much where I am right now.
You sound like one of the voices you did on, what is it, the Jolly Rogers comedy troupe.
On Jolly Roger, yeah.
That was a comedy troupe that, for our listeners, that you did when you were a free radio type.
Free Radio Berkeley and Berkeley Liberation Radio in San Francisco. We were the Jolly Roger comedy
troupe. Have a lot of those old tapes. They're wonderful satire. I'm really
so glad you do. I really loved a lot of those skits.
I hope you have
one of my favorites that always comes back to me is when, you know, we're at the New Age restaurant and the guy comes in and serves us our dinner, and like we're eating rocks and sticks and gravel and just bravely complimenting the food. That was the entire skit, and we used all these wonderful sound effects of like crunching rocks, and you know, we're just like these brave New Agey people eating completely nutrition-free, insanely inedible food. We thought that was such a wonderful comment on the time.
Yeah, I played their stuff. In fact, I'll probably play some again. I continue to do it because even though it is very topical and so 20 years old, it's still the same kinds of issues are still bouncing around.
It's true. We had, like, being chased around by the FBI and chased around by FCC people, and it was just, I don't know. I really thought it was timeless in a lot of ways.
That was great. Yeah. And, of course, now you've for the last, it has been 20 years, you've been writing Hard Times and then the Pepper Spray Times, which comes out every month and covers events topically and is covering them now, right?
It is true. There is so much material. I opened up the newspaper this morning and realized I had cut out, like, 6 different stories. And there's just too much to cover in the Pepper Spray Times. I'm really enjoying that, Tillerson, the Secretary of State and Secretary of Defense go off to Mexico, and they go, these were really productive talks. And the Mexican foreign minister is saying, this was a pile. This was a stinking, rotten pile. And you can only tell what he's saying if you speak Spanish. So it's just, it's wonderful. The two of them are side by side, and of course, you know, the Americans are playing to their audience, who, for the most part, is not a group of people who can navigate Spanish very well. And I just laughed my head off. I thought, this is fabulous. That's going to be at least one story in the coming up Pepper Spray Times.
Well, you told me that, you know, you've been laid low, so you haven't done much around Berkeley, but is there anything you want to talk about at all at this point?
Most of the people who are politically inclined are leaning into the election coming up in March here. We have an election of the 9th city council, or rather the 9th city council member. So right now we have 8, and one of them was District 4 representative and is now mayor. So we need a District 4 representative, and so everybody's scrambling around and going door to door, which if I were well, I might be doing. But
well, no, what significance does it have for homeless folks? Because I know that you initially were hopeful of the current council, and then you were severely disappointed, and then you were skeptical.
I wasn't very hopeful for a variety of reasons. One, the most overt voices for homeless advocacy in this town in the past year have been, I'm going to just say, co-opted in a variety of ways. One, by government money, of course, people who want the city's money to run their homeless outreach style groups. I don't have to tell people in Santa Cruz what that's about. They kind of dumbed down their perspectives, and they certainly did. So they're still celebrating the election of Jesse Araguin as mayor, even though, hey, he was pretty much hand-in-hand with the Downtown Berkeley Association's anti-homeless laws, which are still intact. So the effort we made early in his tenure, in the first 2 or 3 weeks around Christmas, to get them to roll back the anti-homeless laws, specifically the laws around so-called camping and so-called, you know, tents and blocking and, you know, the weird way they abuse extant law to specifically attack homeless and poor people. That failed. Now, other people won't tell you that. But you ask if those laws are still on the books, not only will they have to acknowledge that they are, but they're being used by the same groups of people, the police, the outreach group hired by the Downtown Berkeley Association. All of that is still intact. It's still being used against people. People are still racking up tickets, being chased around. Now, they did open some more shelter space. So if that really floats your boat, I guess that would be a great thing. It doesn't do a lot for me. The other reason I say that is that I did, from my bed here, watch the Berkeley City Council, the most recent one, I think, which was last week, at which what they did was codify, sanction Airbnb. And so that's one of my most least favorite things on the planet.
And again, remind listeners who may have been sleeping for a few years what Airbnb is.
Airbnb is a it is a San Francisco startup where people rent out an extra bedroom in their homes for money. They euphemistically call it the sharing economy. It's a whole lot like Uber, where people use their own cars to become unpermitted taxis. And in Berkeley, just like in many many towns across the nation, all of this was illegal. Technically, in every conceivable respect, it was illegal. You can't turn your house in a residential area or in an apartment building into a hotel for nightly or even three nightly stays because it takes long-term residential housing off the market. Taking housing off the market in the middle of a housing crisis, not a good thing. So to me, this is a no-brainer. If Berkeley honestly did have what they call a progressive majority now or ever, Airbnb would have been kicked out of town. Instead of that, they have granted Airbnb legal status with a whole bunch of rules nobody's ever going to check up on and follow up on. So I watched that happen, and what's terrible is, like, don't I sound like this decrepit old lady? I actually am a decrepit old lady, but now I even sound like one, so it's cracking me up.
It's honesty, honesty in broadcasting.
Yeah, it's great. But I saw some great voices, some of whom I knew, but many of whom I'd never met before. People from the nascent Berkeley Tenants Union. You know, I thought that Berkeley Tenants Union had been defunct. I thought it had gone away. But there were some great speakers from those groups saying everything I could possibly say and then some. So I was thrilled that at least the truth and the truth to power element was really beautifully illustrated. Now, you may ask yourself, and I certainly have asked myself, why would a group of city council representatives who had declared only a year ago that we were in a housing emergency take all these empty beds and allow them to be taken off the long-term rental market and turned into a cottage industry for essentially rich property owners and homeowners.
How many beds are we, how much room are we talking about? How many people are being, you know,
the last time I looked it up, it was about three times the amount of homeless people on our streets, about 3,000 on any given night. Excuse me. There's about 3,000 rentals. That doesn't mean they're all available on that given night, but there are about 3,000 rentals in Berkeley. And that is a combination of apartments, rooms in homes in residential properties, rooms in the backyards of residential properties where you have a yurt, you know, a yurt with a hot cup of tea in the morning, that kind of thing. They're charging like $150 to $250 for something like that. People are making a ton of money off basically a one-night stand in the yurt in the backyard that used to be the vegetable garden.
Yes, but Carol, we've heard the pleas here in Santa Cruz as well from homeowners say they can't make their mortgages. And that
they just can't make that mortgage.
Yeah,
I love that.
It's just,
yeah,
we need the money.
People showed up in droves, and they just cracked me up. There were a couple. If I had been able to go, and if I'd been able to rope a couple of my actor theater-related friends into it, we would have imitated those homeowners. We would have gone as, you know, Mrs. T. Bill Banks and really cried our eyes out about how this was really cramping our vacations in Tahiti. So
now, is that what it is, or do you think people are at the borderline about to lose their houses in Berkeley?
Hey, some people are the borderline, but what they can do is legitimately rent out a portion of their bedroom by permitting it. As long as it's permitted, I got no beef with that. I want every bed filled. As a matter of fact, if I were the mayor of Berkeley, what I would do with my housing emergency is immediately take the read of all those, 1,500 to 3,000 rentals being listed in Berkeley on Airbnb. And I would commandeer each and every one of those yurts and beds to house the people who are behind the dumpsters and under the trees and trying to live in the back alleys and under the freeways and say, have I got a yurt for you? And I would get all those people to, they would be obligated, unless they would prefer to be prosecuted, to open their homes. Because what I've seen in my lengthy stay on the planet is that that's how Berkeley used to operate as a matter of course when we had an actual sharing economy. And I'm one of these people. I always lived in these shared houses where if there was somebody traveling through either job hunting or just here to see the Grateful Dead, they had our couch if they wanted it. There'd be two or three people sleeping in sleeping bags on the front porch or in the front room or the back porch or in the backyard or something. And it was just understood that you share what you got. That is a sharing economy.
But you didn't need people to seek permits to do that. In fact, they wouldn't have been granted, I imagine.
Because we weren't taking money. We didn't take a dime. And we were really poor. And that's the funny thing is when these people talk about their idea of poverty is having to actually reach into their investments and yank out some of their capital. That's their idea of poverty. And all I can say is, my, how times have changed.
Any word about how, I heard that first they came for the homeless, the encampment on the edge of Berkeley has been left alone for the last month.
Where are they?
They were when I came to Berkeley 3 weeks ago or so. At Adeline and right where the BART line crosses overhead. And it was, then I came back the second visit, they were still there. And I think I read recently that they are still, this is an encampment of about 10 or 20 people now. It's smaller than
great
before.
Great news. I'm so glad to hear that.
Yeah.
I did know that Friends of Adeline, they had some marvelous support in that area. But they also had opposition. I didn't know how it was going to fall. so glad to hear that.
Yeah, there is a Montessori school around the bend, which, not the school people, but I think some of the parents were a little paranoid about homeless folks. You know, they've heard that homelessness is catching. You know, you've heard about that, I'm sure. It's contagious. So we're talking with Carol Denny. We're going to let her go back to bed because it's unfair, and you shouldn't be answering the phone, Carol. I don't know what you're doing.
Oh, I am so delighted to talk to you. I'm sorry I sound so terrible, but...
I don't want you to get worse. That's the deal.
Yeah, it's true. I'm not supposed to talk.
Yeah, take some nice hot tea with a lot of lemon, perhaps.
Okay, sounds good.
Hey, thank you, babe.
Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
And that was Cornerstone Carol Denny. I've had many strong disputes and many strong bouts of praise for her, too. I've outbursts in different directions with Carol. She's a long-term activist in Berkeley who's been not just singing about the issue. She does a lot of singing, and I play her songs quite regularly on this show. You're tuned to the free radio stream at freakradio.org. As mentioned earlier, this is my last live show until we find a new studio. And I want to remind you that if you want to help us with that, you could be in line for a $500 reward. Yes. You have to find us a 10 by 10 space, more or less. It could be 10 by 9. It could be 11 by 4. Well, that's a little. It has to be essentially around 100 square feet, at least, one way or another. And has to have access to electricity and internet, and we want access to a bathroom one way or another if possible. It can be outdoors, because we'll build a shack to cover ourselves. It can be indoors. I'm not sure which is preferable. I've done both. I suppose indoors is preferable. And if you have any ideas, it could be anywhere in the Santa Cruz City area. It could even be in the larger county area. We're looking. We're hoping. We're hoping you're looking. So give a call to me on my off-air line, which is also the line for the homeless organization, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, Homeless Civil Rights Organization, I should say. Although at the last meeting, our homeless population outnumbered the housed population. Of course, it was a pretty small meeting. But the number is 423-4833, 423-4833, or... 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF. HUFF, of course, is the acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And let me know, and I will pass on the word to those who know better about what kind of spaces are viable. They'll go check it out, and if we find we can use it, you're in line for some bucks. And we're in line for an opportunity to go indoors and pick up where we are from where we're broadcasting, or at least streaming now. As I said, we should be broadcasting within a week or two, but the broadcasts will not be from a studio, and therefore they will not be new shows for the most part, or at least they won't be new live shows for the most part. But think about it. See if you want to make a little money. See if you at least look around. Help extend the life of free radio and keep me babbling at you on the air. That's a very important thing to do. And now let's have somebody else sing at you, and I'll take a brief rest and a swig or two of water. Here's our old man, Ryan Harvey.
what you did. You gave us all something that we needed. And looking from here, now it might take years, but we realize it's full importance. How it inspired its participants, how it danced outside of politics, how it altered public consciousness, how it built a future movement, how it broke a spell of silence, how it gave us all some guidance. And hey, Wisconsin, you captured my heart. You gave me hope the way you fought. You sparked something and you opened the door. Took that moment and you made it yours. Took that moment and you made it yours. Cause every revolution has a context. And social change is a process. I saw the sunrise to melt the snow, to clear the land for more light to grow. And it's spring now. Well, it's spring now. Well, it's spring now. And hey, Wisconsin, you captured my heart. You gave me hope the way you fought. You sparked something and you opened the door. Cause it took that moment and you made it yours. Took that moment and you made it yours. Took that moment and you made it ours. And it's spring now.
And that was Ryan Harvey, Wisconsin, from, I guess, a lot of his videos posted in one big clump on YouTube, if you want to look up Ryan Harvey's stuff, Top Tracks, Ryan Harvey. So now I'm going to bounce back to some street interviews, and I think we're talking earlier this week. Maybe a little bit earlier than earlier this week. But eventually I think we'll jump to the Red Church, where there was a line of folks eating and another guy with an audio recorder. That was me going from person to person saying, what's the news, what's the news? And getting occasionally a bit of news here and there. Then we'll look at the Freedom Sleepout 85 weeks outside the city council, at least every Tuesday night and Wednesday morning. Growing number of people are outside. I don't know if you've traveled up and down Pacific Avenue recently, the last couple days. There have been increasing numbers of people sitting in doorways, which is illegal, even if you're not blocking a doorway. It's illegal to be within 14 feet of a building on with your butt on the sidewalk along the sacred Santa Cruz Pacific Avenue way, but that's been happening more and more. People are getting a little tired of responding to middle-class intimidation, and the same thing's happening at City Hall under the eaves of City Hall when the first alarm security or the Rangers try to drive them away. I think there's, some folks will simply just ignore the first alarm's threat and go back to sleep, particularly if it's raining. And sometimes they get driven out into the rain. Sometimes they usually go to the sidewalk and sleep there. There was a huge tent. It was 10 feet long and 6 feet high, it looked like, taking up part of a parking space and maybe two parking spaces and also a portion of the sidewalk, donated by the person who set up the tent, by just a caring citizen who happened by last Tuesday to Freedom Sleepout 85, and it housed six people. I don't know if six people even used it, but there was space in there for six folks, maybe more. And that's, what people do when the weather gets cold and there's plenty of indoor space, but it's all locked up and patrolled by thugs in uniform who are officers of the law and Parks and Rec Rangers protecting the environment, and first alarm security defending the safety and of the city council staff and the library staff from these ruffians who are falling asleep in the library or falling asleep outside the library. I mean, goodness. Anyway, let's hear some street interviews and maybe hear from you. 427-3772 is my number here at the studio. I'm hoping also to hear from Wes White, who reports that an attempt, I think, to strengthen the sanctuary status of the Salinas city area was rejected 3-4 in a city council vote last Tuesday, but I don't have all the details. I may take a look online and see if I can find them, and we'll see what we can do with that. But in the meantime, let's hear some stuff from the streets.
Yes, sir, I am a drummer myself.
And how are the authorities treating you and your drum?
Not too bad, actually. They say we can play in these boxes. These little boxes with the little...
The brass
boxes. Yeah, the brass boxes.
Actually, you are inside the biggest brass box on Pacific Avenue.
Yes, sir. The only big one on Pacific Avenue.
You've chosen the big brass box.
The big brass box, yes.
It's an ego thing?
No, it's just I'm tired of not being able to drum anywhere.
And the big brass box, which really is a piece of sidewalk that where there are four discs, small discs set at the corners of this permitted space, is right in front of O'Neill's Sports Shop. And it's pretty long. It's, well, at least longer than the usually, I think it's 2-foot by 4-foot spaces. Maybe that you find up and down. There's Pacific Avenue. Well, you find about 10 or 12 of them in usable places. There's a total, I think, of 26, but many of them are in spots that musicians, performers, tablers, vendors wouldn't use. Just too far out of the way of where people are. This one is a larger space. The marimba band plays there during, I guess it's a couple times a month or maybe once a month, not sure. And they gather a huge crowd, and they usually play, I think they play outside the spaces. I don't think they even have, I don't know if they have permits or not. I think they're willing to get permits. They're not Food Not Bombs oriented and saying, the First Amendment is our permit. They try to, scrunch themselves into the confines of the city laws, which, I don't know. I don't like it. However, the idea of marimba players being on the street to play. Anyway, this is Irish, who is sitting alone in this big space. And I've noticed fewer and fewer people on Pacific Avenue as performers. I mentioned there's more homeless people sitting next to doorways. The last couple days I've seen that's often more. I noticed that more up on North Pacific. Actually, no, South Pacific, I guess it is. Beyond Cathcart, even beyond Laurel Street, as you move toward the wharf. Anyway, let's hear some more of this.
You know, it's like they say go to the beach, and then people down there say go up to downtown, and then the only place you can drum and put a donation hat out is downtown. Nowhere else in the city are you allowed to ask for donations. Anywhere in the city, but in these brass boxes.
And if they tell you that, they're misinforming you. The law just, it does limit donation seeking on Pacific Avenue and on the wharf. And they have to be in the brass boxes on Pacific Avenue and the side streets, but not on the other side of Front Street, for example, or the other side of Cedar Street.
They're misinforming me.
I think so.
No, they told us specifically musicians are allowed to play in these brass boxes only.
I think they're mistaken or lying. In the case of
make money. If you want to make money, that is, yeah.
Or it's possible that this fellow may have misunderstood. Let's not necessarily call our good officers of the law and the enforcers of these fine regulations liars. I mean, that can be the case on occasion, and it might even be considered to be a mellow and regular option that the guardians of the law feel they have the right to do, all, of course, in the public interest. But I don't necessarily know that this guy was lied to, but he got misinformed somehow.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're allowed to...
Maybe they passed some new laws. Who knows?
No. I'm pretty sure I would have heard of it.
Maybe this is something for a demonstration. We could drum in those spaces as a Huff group.
Except that my drumming is limited.
Hey, I can drum.
You can drum. Okay. Anything you want to add, Irish?
Not too much. I just said God bless Santa Cruz and free America.
That's right.
The sooner the better. Thank you, man.
Not our government.
Yeah, so, hang on. So here's a couple of Bible studiers inside the sacred brass boxes chatting. Hi. And it seems everybody is orienting themselves to the brass rectangles, or the rectangles demarcated by four brass discs.
The sanctuary squares.
Sanctuary and the squares, or sanctuary is only for squares.
Sanctuary from the pigs.
In any case, we have a violinist here in front of the Penny Ice Creamery and also the Bookshop Santa Cruz.
Howdy.
And this, of course, is another area where Huff used to do a lot of tabling.
Looks like he's in a box.
Yep, they're all in the box. Sounds like, I think it's Beethoven, but I'm not sure. Well, why don't we cross over here? I'm in front of the Support Our Homeless Veterans, a table with flags and literature, and a man who has this to say. What's your name, sir?
Malika.
And Malika, how long have you been doing this?
About 2 years.
And you say, you're just telling me Santa Cruz is great, no hassles. But have you been spending much time here on Pacific Avenue?
Not much time, just a little bit. But far as I'm concerned, a lot of the people are pretty nice all over Santa Cruz. And
how long have you been at this table, this spot, today?
Today about 6-7 hours. No, 8 o'clock. Yeah, so about 8 o'clock.
And are there regular patrols and rangers walking up and down?
I've seen the rangers a couple of times, seen the cops once, and no bothers, no hassles.
That's good. As long as I'm inside the brass. The brass box. They're not making you move every hour, which they could be doing.
Right, they could be making you move every hour.
Did that happen to you before when you were here?
Yeah, when I first got here, like Sunday. And Monday I had to move maybe once. But they weren't too bad. Because the officer know me from being on the other side of Front Street, so.
Huh.
Yeah.
And what about the income? How are you doing? I see that you're looking for $5, $10, $20. Are the generous folks of Santa Cruz?
Yeah, $1 a little more than anything.
Too generous. More generous with the shoe fetish, the artisans, and the bunny shoes.
Yeah, well, they're generous with their kindness, though. They're very kind out here. So whatever they give us, like we say, it helps. It helps, and we're not complaining. We would love more so we can complete our project, which is buying land so we can build container homes.
We as?
Homeless Veterans in America.
Tell me a little bit about the group, if you want.
Well, my group, I started 2 years ago, and basically what we do is direct outreach. We're absolutely an information kiosk for a lot of the homeless out in this area. There's a lot of homeless people in Santa Cruz, so we have resources and events and things that people can go and do and be a part of the community.
Have a weekly meeting somewhere or anything?
No, not us. We don't have a weekly meeting, but there are weekly meetings pertaining to the same thing that I'm working on.
Where are those at?
They're at the Veterans Center. You can go to Holistic Veterans. Curtis Relaford knows a lot of that's my main contact point. Curtis Relaford helping me find out what
he gets hassled a lot more than you do, I would imagine.
Yeah, probably so.
Loud musical.
Yeah.
And that big vehicle.
Yeah, yeah. So other than that, yeah, everything is good. You know, we're maybe 1/10 of the way to our goal, which is $10,000 by April 15th. So
what's the money going to be spent for?
The money going to be spent for land. Land acquisition.
Right,
buying land, and we're going to build dome and container homes, and we're going to honor my dad who fought in Korea, Mahone Lightfoot. He fought in Korea, and he was 82nd Airborne, death from above.
Any chance of getting rid of the politicians or send him to Korea?
Maybe. If you guys, pen is mightier than the sword, so who knows what can happen.
Where do you want to get the land?
Hopefully in Ben Lomond or either Pacific Cove, and also I heard Crestline has a lot of places that we're going to try to look at to purchase.
So, but then you run into zoning laws. Unless, of course, you were a religion, then you could beat these zoning laws. They're going to try and stop you, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but we got a thing for that, too. We have a plan. We have a plan for that. We're working our plan, and we're planning our work. So
nicely put.
Yeah.
And we have been speaking with
Malachi.
And Malachi, you can be reached online, perhaps?
Sustainable Living Club, SLPHVIA on Facebook. And GoFundMe, GoFundMe 9QT. What is it? It's, 9QGMT6ES at GoFundMe.
And the simplest way to find you if one wanted to use a browser would be?
Just cell phone number. Yeah, 916-239-5639 for any questions.
One more time.
916-239-5639. Any questions?
Thank you, Malachi.
Okay.
All right. We have a religious crier, also a jewelry vendor. You can hear in the background as I walk down the street, headed for payment of citations, parking tickets. With
Asia street music.
Sorry, Asia. You've told me before, but and you're parked here in front of the Rittenhouse tomb, as we call it, and you have this to say.
I'm going to serenade the dead.
The dead Pacific Avenue after the machinations of the merchants and the shitty council.
And the tomb. Yes.
Well, maybe I'll happen back. Although I got to get to my car before I get a second ticket.
That would be epic. Yes.
Yes. Any reports of anything that's happened to you recently that you want to pass on?
And Asia is a man with a white cane. I presume he's seeing impaired. And when I say he was parked in front of the Rittenhouse building at the corner of, Church? I think, yeah, the corner of Church and Pacific. He was sitting there looking. He asked me if I knew the way to the Rittenhouse building, which was right next to where he was, but he was looking for the spot where you can actually, some people, I'm not sure if they're given permission or they simply do it anyway. It's a sort of an ingress from the sidewalk where there's theoretically some businesses there. I think that one business has actually gotten into the Rittenhouse first floor of the building, but generally speaking, the building is looks pretty tomb-like and pretty vacant and has been for, what, 3, 4, I don't know how many years. More than that, I'm sure. Anyway, we continue our conversation, and here it is.
I'm looking for a place to lay down.
You mean indoors, outdoors, or where?
Preferably from the rain, yeah.
And it will be raining Thursday through Tuesday, they say.
Yes, they do say.
So this goes on the air on Thursday night. do you want to leave a phone number or email address or location for people?
A location under the Water Street Bridge.
Fair enough. For all of you adventurous Samaritans, here comes two of those fine park rangers who are so sweet and kind on Pacific Avenue. Maybe they will help you find, I don't think so, lodging. They haven't been harassing this homeless veterans table, though. That's pretty cool.
Homeless veterans table.
He's got a table up here. Guy's looking for a place to stay. If you know where he can go, rains are coming. Apparently not. So, those helpful rangers on Pacific Avenue.
Hey, how are you?
They're very friendly, though.
Have a good day.
But they don't have any help for you. Unfortunate, isn't it?
You can help them out, though.
Can I? Don't you get paid a good wage? Don't you guys have access to city buildings? Guess not. Thanks for nothing, folks. That's your taxpayer dollars at work, those two rangers downtown. Anyway, you take care, Asia.
Thank you.
Thank God, right, Rob? So you don't want that. Right?
So we're talking with...
And before we get into that next segment... it's ironic, those two rangers, I think it was a man and a woman, they're doing this patrolling of Pacific Avenue, which really annoys me, since Pacific Avenue is not a park, and the idea of using the rangers as a sort of an enforcement squad of the downtown ordinances, anybody who enforces the downtown ordinances gets put onto my shit list, because these are ordinances that are designed to make it difficult for people to severely restrict activity downtown that's non-commercial, street activity for people who don't have money or aren't there for commercial purposes. sets up this very limited number of spaces where they can be. It bans people from resting, sitting down on the sidewalk. And about 98% of the sidewalk, unless you can, you know, spend some money in a sidewalk cafe and use the outdoor patio areas where the businesses have usurped and taken over and privatized public sidewalks. Not content with that, of course, they've created the downtown ordinances to further essentially privatize, and using a public agency, the Parks and Rec, as a goon squad to go after homeless people, to intimidate them, to direct them, to get move away. And not just homeless people, young people, anyone who seems to be doing something that doesn't look right to, I don't know, a merchant or a conservative walker by, because they are supposedly... They're not just, they respond to complaints, they say. Actually, I haven't talked to Rangers recently about what their latest modus operandi is. Anyway, they are particularly notorious for going after people on the river who are, prior to, this is happening right prior to the most recent rains, which I think began last Thursday. That was last week. And people on the river need their protective gear. They don't need their stuff taken, and the same is true of the people at City Hall. But these ranges are a part of a whole system of oppression that does just that. And so sometimes my my feelings leap out in spite of me, and I start ranting a bit, although I sounded more moderate to myself listening than I thought I was. So that's good. Or it's not as bad as I thought it was. So let's hear some more. Now we're getting into the Freedom Sleep Out number 85, I believe. Let's see.
Nah, go ahead, man.
Oh, you sure?
Yeah.
Okay. Anything you would like to say for Freedom?
No, this is actually the Red Church last Monday. So that would be, I guess, the 20th. Today being the 23rd. Yeah. 20th.
Negative.
Thank you.
I'm selling my stuff.
Shout out. Interested in knowing what's going on outside, anything that's happened to you want to talk about, anything you've seen in the last week?
No. Just a storm. It sucks.
It's pretty fucking wet out there. Yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah, it is. You know when it's going to let up?
You know, every day the weather report changes. The next 2 days, at least, are supposed to be rainy, is what I heard, what I read tonight.
Do you know people that professionally record people? Like right now, that could help me out?
You mean like pay for recording, that sort of thing?
Maybe if they could do it.
This
like
is
maybe
a volunteer.
Like
we're a pirate.
I have no money right now.
Yeah, I understand. Really? We're a pirate radio station. We just run around and record people who want to be. You know, everybody has their own position.
There's no way to give you a commission of the end product instead?
I don't know.
With Jeff.
And Jeff, why? Well, we were asking a question.
Why is the warming center not open, or another place for people to go to during this storm? Good question.
Luckily, Jim has an answer. Jim, what's
the question?
He's got the same question.
How come the Civic Center ain't open? The Civic. How come that's not open?
Probably because we haven't opened it. We should all rush down there and open the fucking thing.
The Civic Center of all places. Why is that laying empty during a storm? Come on, man. You know, just once in a while.
Well, you don't want homeless people to wet down a dry area. You see, that's a problem. You don't want that space made wet by a bunch of questionable individuals.
It's called an emergency situation. That storm's bad. It's going to get worse.
It is a bad storm.
I'll fill you in later on other developments.
Thank you, sir. And we've been talking with
Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff. Any street reports?
Horrible. And the police aren't making it any better.
Tell me about that. What's happened?
It's constantly making us move out of all the doorways in the worst weather.
And it's happened today to you, or just talking generally?
The past 3 nights.
And tell me the last time this happened to you.
What's today? Sunday night.
It's Monday, so where were you?
I was in a doorway on... I was Bunny's door, Bunny Shoes.
And what about what time of day or night?
About 2 o'clock in the morning.
And what happened?
They made me leave.
And again, you have to, if you want to believe this man's story, picture the scene. This is a closed business. It's simply an overhang in the middle of the rain. Nobody's there except he's sitting there. And the police are coming to drive him away into the rain and giving him no alternatives. And this is at a time when there's space for 100 people inside the shelter, 110 maybe, the shelters. There are two of them, which people are bused to if they can walk all the way out to the edge of the Poganip. They can then get bused to this if they get there at 4 o'clock, and they can bus, and they get up at 6 in the morning and have to leave. But again, we're talking about 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people in space for 100 of them. Although, full disclosure, according to Steve Plaich, who I also spoke to the same night that this interview happened at the Red Church, the Calvary Episcopal Church at Lincoln and Cedar Streets, which has a once-a-week meal. That's once-a-week meal. See if you can survive on that. The shelters have not, the shelters list was not filled the last time he was there. I think there was, it was 90% filled. So some people aren't making it there, although it could have been, I think when I talked to him on Monday, it wasn't raining anymore. Although I think it was the last of the rain on Monday. So let's hear some more from this guy who has to deal with the weather and the police.
How many cops, or who was it?
Just one.
And what did this officer say?
He was like, you got to go.
Did he give you a place to go?
No.
And what was your reaction?
I just got up and did what I was asked and left.
And was it raining at the time?
Yes.
And what did you do?
I got up and left.
And after that?
Walked around in the rain all night.
Didn't find another doorway?
No. Because they were all riding around all night to make sure no one stayed where they weren't supposed to.
Did you then see the police later in the evening after you were walking around?
All night long.
And how many cars did you notice, if any, more than one, if there was more than one?
Oh, they were riding around 5 or 6 deep, going around to all the nooks and crannies throughout Santa Cruz, just looking for people to harass and throw out of doorways.
Charming. And we've been talking with
Dennis William Russell.
Thank you, Dennis. Should be on free radio. Ricardo Lopez.
Yep, he's right. They're going from in big groups from doorway to doorway. You had to see when they pulled up. I'm not kidding you. It looked like 10 brand new RVs. What are they called? The Humvees? The big suburban van, those things. 12 of them, 10 or 12, pulled up, and a couple of police cars in front of the post office. Like, they're good thing there wasn't any real crime anywhere. Good thing they don't have real crime.
When was this, Ricardo?
Oh, this was a month ago, I'd say. But it's regular with them harassing the people at the post office or any place that they're at all dry, taking their stuff and not writing it down. They took a knife. They took a Lenovo computer from me. A month ago, I just got my stuff back from them. They didn't, all of my bedding they took and threw away. I was lucky to get back my backpack. They emptied the contents of my backpack out. I have a great big one. Yeah. It's just straight up stealing. The biggest thieves in this town are the police, and then behind them are the Rangers.
Now, anything happened in the last couple of days that you want to note?
That some of the Rangers actually have been okay, but no, not within a couple of days. The other day, last time it rained, they chased me around from one spot to the other because the river flooded. We couldn't be there where we're safer. And then they chased me from one spot to another all night long and up till the next morning. Now, when the river went back down, I went down to the river and went to sleep.
And that's often where you crash out.
Pardon me?
That's often where you go to sleep.
Yeah, because when you're down at the river, that's the last place on earth, isn't it? There's nowhere else to go once you're down by the river.
And under the bridges.
Thank God is for the bridges.
And we've been talking with
Ricardo Lopez.
Thanks, Ricardo.
And of course, at least if it's as it was a few years ago, the city has won meshed off areas under the bridges, so you can't use most of the space under the bridges. Some of it they can't because it's pathway space that people use and walk through. But then in order to make sure people don't cluster, they have put in devices called mosquitoes, which are devices that emit a high-pitched hum. I think I've been near one of these once, which was positioned near a bank on near Soquel and, well, near the Soquel Bridge. But these are acknowledged by the assistant city manager, Scott Collins, who's acknowledged that they do exist, that they are there. He would not reveal the location of the devices. And it's another one of the anti-homeless devices, anti-homeless designed to drive away groups of people from loitering by making it uncomfortable to be there. I haven't heard much discussion about these devices recently, but they were talked about a lot 2 or 3 years ago, and I've got no indication they've been removed. Or that they've had, actually, I guess that they've had a lot of impact, although maybe people have just moved away from them and are clustering in other places or ignoring them or sticking their fingers in their ears. I haven't heard complaints about them anyway recently, but it's just one of the numerous devices being used essentially to callously drive people who are without resources away so that one can have a pristine, homeless-free area and sort of circulate as though everything is fine and we can all roll into a pleasant tomorrow.
You bet. Thank you for everything you do.
You too, man.
Thank you.
Anything happening outside you want to talk about? Thank you. Any reports for Free Radio about life outside?
What's that?
Any reports for Free Radio?
Any reports for Free Radio about outside?
Yes.
Oh, it's just over the top. I've had enough, and can we please turn it off now?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Do you want to say who you are?
I am Kelly. Thank you.
Thanks, Kelly.
You're welcome.
Any free reports? Radio? Yes. Thank you.
Hello.
Hey, man. Steve, any reports for Free Radio?
I have a real hard time with dealing with illiterates.
Yeah.
I'm 63 years old. I have a hard time dealing with illiterates. I'm like 90% of the people here can barely speak.
I'm Kelly.
I want some food. Well, why does it take you a half an hour to decide what you want?
How's the weather outside treating you?
I don't care. I'm in through it.
Right on. Thank you, Steve.
If I die tomorrow, that's okay. I don't care. I'm 63 years old. If I die tomorrow, I don't care.
Good life?
No. Well, yeah. I just can't stand President Trump. Bingo.
You and a lot of people. Thank you.
You got me.
All right, Steve.
You got me, buddy.
Anything you want to say, James, for Free Radio?
Hey, nothing new.
I like the pretzels.
He likes the pretzels. Anything for Free Radio you'd like to say? Any reports for Free Radio?
For Free Radio?
Yeah, in case what's happening outside, what's happened to you recently?
Red tide.
Which means?
Seabright, don't get in the water.
For those of us who are dumb about this issue, what do you mean by that?
Too much debris, bacteria.
Now, you're talking about, are you a surfer yourself? Or?
I'm a wannabe marine biologist.
And are you outside these days? Are you houseless?
Not really. I have a car to reside in and my sister's house and a few friends.
Any hassles in your car from law enforcement authority?
As long as I don't drive it.
I mean, they don't come and say, you're sleeping in your car.
No. They're pretty cool. They're being good.
And we've been talking with?
James Clements.
Thanks, James. All right. Want to say anything for Free Radio?
Hi.
You don't say. Hi. Anything you want to say for Free Radio?
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. And what about you, sir? You with a hat.
Oh, well, I've noticed a trend lately at M-Line. Maybe the last 3 years. Maybe it's not lately. That the Hispanic workers seem to help this Hispanics with their benefits better than the white people.
When did you last notice this?
This last voucher I'm trying to get credited. It's supposed to take them 3 days. And it's taken about 10 each time I turn in a voucher.
Yeah.
And this has been going on the last 3 months, so I don't get my last motel stay because I don't have the money reimbursed to stay. Then the next month comes and it's too late to use it.
In the name of your worker, if you wish to say
it. I won't say that.
Keeping it under your hand.
Keeping an eye on her. And then, but I notice, you know, the Hispanic people get theirs like in a day or two. Boom, right? Oh, Martinez.
When did you last see this happening with a Hispanic person?
Well, heard that, and I heard a lot of stories because I've been talking about it, and other people said,
spreading the word, your racist trash is being spread everywhere. Yeah.
No, they're the biased ones. Yeah. I mean, I don't care if they help their race a little more, but don't disparage me or cut my benefits off because you're helping someone else, right? I agree.
At least take care of my benefits. Okay, you want to give them a little extra on the side.
But no specifics recently that comes to your mind that you've seen with your own eyes.
Someone just was telling me a story of when they had the paper food stamps. They saw a Hispanic go up there, and the lady goes, "Oh, here's two big envelopes of food stamps."
How long ago was the story told you?
Last week. But the paper ones haven't been around since, 2000?
So it's an old story.
It's been a while, yeah, old story.
And you wish to say you are you going to remain anonymous?
I'm going to be anonymous.
Thank you.
I'm the watchdog and keep an eye on him.
Any reports from the street?
Yeah, I guess I'm just really grateful that Santa Cruz is the way it is. You can't starve to death here. You couldn't possibly starve to death in Santa Cruz.
And we're talking with
Bob Mondua.
Bob, how long have you been? Are you outside?
Yeah, I am. I've been for about 2 months, and there's a lot of resources here. I'm not going to be for long.
And how long? 2 months, you say?
Yes.
Any hassles from police?
No, I stay where I'm not. I stay where I'm supposed to. Don't give them a hard time, and I don't get a hard time.
Do you have a place to sleep at night legally, or just you're tolerated?
Well, yeah, I got to stay awake from 11 o'clock till whatever time, yeah. But
you generally stay awake at night?
You're supposed to, but yeah.
How do you manage that? What do you do to stay awake? Meth, perhaps? Coffee? What?
Yeah, coffee.
No confessions here?
No, I just pay attention. I just pay attention. Don't get in the way. Don't give anybody a hard time. Stay moving, and I don't get in trouble.
And again, we've been talking with
Bob Mondua.
Thanks, Bob.
Yes. And I'm very grateful for the resources in Santa Cruz. I'm not going to be in this position very long because these resources are available.
Anything you want to say for free radio?
I got a radio like yours now. It's a Sony. That actually works pretty good. Yeah. You don't have any AAAs, do you?
AAAs being?
AAA batteries.
I do not. This is doesn't have a battery that way. But anything happening outside you want us to talk about?
See,
you're a man of an instrument with you.
Yeah. Playing guitar and learning about world peace with people that understand it as much as I do.
Have you been playing outside on the street?
Yeah.
And how's that treating you?
It's wet.
Any hassles?
Just the people that are grumpy. You know.
What about the guys?
I tell them, I go, take it easy.
Man behind you. Any? What about from police, rangers, that sort of thing?
No, they're actually being pretty reasonable out here for the factor of. So, no.
Okay. Sounds good. And do you have your composure on stuff?
Life's a carnival.
You're here, and we've been talking with
Jeff
Patterson. Thank you, Jeff.
And all this is happening at the Red Church, and you can check out both a good meal and also rub elbows with folks outside if you want. That happens every Monday. It usually starts around, there's a kind of a sometimes service, sometimes a speech. It's usually religiously oriented. That runs from 5 to 6, and then from 6 to whenever the vigilant bouncer begins banging tables together to get people to leave, although it's always seemed to me to be kind of rude and disrespectful of people eating, but I guess the claim would be, well, this is a part of the Calvary Episcopal is part of the Association of Faith Communities, not the winter shelter program, but the year-round 20-person program that they have, and they rotate every night. Not sure what night the Red Church has its program, but you homeless folks better look alive and get moving out of here because there are things more important than you finishing your dinner. Seems to be the attitude of the bouncer at the door who will also stop you from taking food out of the room. Or he was doing that, and I suspect he still is doing that. You're tuned, by the way, to Free Radio Santa Cruz, or at least the stream of Free Radio. I'm Robert Norris. This show is called Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides. And I'm going to give you a little music from David Rovix, perhaps an apropos tune, Stand with Standing Rock, since Standing Rock has been almost, the protest there has been significantly dispersed by the authorities, although the protesters say they aren't going to give up. Here's a song about that issue. I think it's a song.
Westerns, after all the lies, after making every effort to deny that history is happening, that it isn't in the past, that the Indian wars continue, that Ishii was not the last, after building all the pipelines, after spraying all the gas, after desecrating graveyards and being told they shall not pass, after shooting all the horses, after driving in with tanks, after sending in the dogs, with soldiers in their ranks, they're standing up at Standing Rock. After all the fire water, after all the famine, after killing all the buffalo, after taking all the salmon, after taking all the water, to slurry all the coal, after mining the uranium from a million giant holes, after stealing and lynching, shooting people as they dance, after trying hard to make sure there'd be no second chance, after declaring Indian country to be one big sacrifice zone, at no point ever trying to acknowledge or atone, they're standing up at Standing Rock. After all the cities ransacked, after all the cities burned, after all the centuries when almost no one even learned that these towns ever existed, up and down the coast, up and down the Mississippi, leaving colonists to boast, this land is our land now, a new homeland for the white, after all the missionaries taking children in the night, after all the slaughter, after centuries of theft, watch the people riding to defend what's left, they're standing up at Standing Rock. They're standing up at Standing Rock.
And that was David Rovick's Stand with Standing Rock. The headlines this morning from Democracy Now!, which Free Radio also covers. We have Democracy Now! At 8 o'clock on our program. You can catch it every weekday, usually the same day that happens. There was a little blurb, and I suppose there's been more that's come out more recently since we're, you know, almost a day later, but the main resistance camp, according to the Democracy Now! Broadcast, set up by the Lakota Water Protectors fighting the $3.8 billion Dakota Access Pipeline, has been largely vacated after protesters were ordered to leave the camp on Wednesday. Police arrested around 10 people. U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and the North Dakota governor had imposed a noon eviction deadline for the hundreds of water protectors still living at the resistance camp. Prayer ceremonies were held on Wednesday, and part of the camp was set on fire before the eviction began. One 17-year-old girl was badly injured by the flames. Water protectors say the resistance camp sits on unceded Sioux territory under the 1851 Treaty of Fort Laramie, and they have a right to remain on their ancestral land. A couple dozen people are still remaining at the camp. Earlier this month, construction crews resumed work on the final sections of the pipeline after the Trump administration granted an easement to allow Energy Transfer Partners to drill beneath the Missouri River. And I'm taking one last look to see if there's anything new that has come up. Well, here's a story from the New York Times 2 hours ago. Standing Rock protest camp, once home to thousands, is razed. And this is dated today. North Dakota arrests 10 as pipeline protest camp empties. North Dakota, that was yesterday, actually. Here's a story from the New York Times. Final holdouts at the sprawling pipeline protest camp south of here were arrested Thursday, and the authorities began using heavy equipment to tear down the remaining structures and clear debris on the federally owned land where thousands had lived in recent months. The arrests of 46 people came a day after an evacuation deadline issued by Governor Doug Burgum. Most protesters left Wednesday of their own volition. Others departed Thursday by crossing the frozen Cannonball River to the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation. Those who remained at the main campsite were taken into custody. Law enforcement does not want to be going in there and making arrests, Lieutenant Tom Iverson of the North Dakota State Highway Patrol said. That puts us in harm's way. It puts others in harm's way. But unfortunately, they put themselves in that position. There were no reports of injuries to police officers or protesters on Thursday. Lieutenant Iverson said about 200 officers took part in the operation. That's 200 officers to make, what is it, 10 to 46 arrests? Interesting. The emptying of the site ended a remarkable mobilization of activists to the remote patch of North Dakota Prairie near the Cannonball and Missouri Rivers. Protest lasted months, drew international attention, and was widely credited with leading to a temporary halt in the construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline. Smaller numbers of protesters remain camped at other sites. Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and protesters say the oil pipeline, which crosses the Missouri River nearby, will pose a grave threat to drinking water on the reservation and further downstream if it ever leaks. Construction on the pipeline, which will carry oil from the Bakken fields in western North Dakota, resumed this month with support from President Trump, and the project could be finished this spring. Dakota authorities said the closing of the main protest camp, which sits on the Army Corps of Engineers land, was necessary to prevent pollution during imminent spring floods. The protest site had developed into a make-do city with semi-permanent buildings, medical tents, and abandoned cars. If that washed into the Missouri River, the authorities said the results could be damaging to the environment. I think you can see the enormous accumulation of garbage and human waste that's been piling up down there, Mr. Burgum said. Is he talking about City Hall, perhaps? They always kind of have the same excuses. I have no idea whether we're not hearing the other side's perspective, and we're getting statements from the spokespeople for eviction, not pictures from independent sources, even from the New York Times reporter that says, oh, there's a lot of crap around here. No, we just get their statements. It's like getting statements of the military about there being no civilian casualties, things of that sort. At least that's my reaction to this. And the story is longer. It's in the New York Times. I don't think I have to read more of it, and so I won't. Let's continue with some Santa Cruz conversations here from the Red Church.
The police have been okay, and the Rangers have been okay with us sleeping in places, you know, where it's not raining, you know, under overhangs, you know.
Last night they were okay?
Oh, yeah, yeah. This morning they had to go around and let everybody know that time to get up, but other than that, they've been really kind about that.
And how many nights were you out in the last week?
Oh, every night, yeah. And
same place or different place?
No one's called them or anything, you know, they're just, you know.
Can we talk about Pacific Avenue? Or?
Yeah, all around the downtown area, they've been fine. They've been really, considerate of this fact that it's been raining and it's been cold out, you know, and a lot of us are out here, you know, so.
How long have you been outside in the past?
Here, on and off, in Santa Cruz for 13 years.
Wow. And what's your name, if you wish
Thomas?
To say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they've been really good about that. I was surprised, you know. They're just making sure that we're okay, and you know, just you know, it's they didn't start asking everybody to wake up and get moving until it was almost 9 o'clock in the morning. So that was pretty good of them, you know.
Have you heard about the Freedom Sleepers?
Sort of. That was a long time ago. Last
night. It's happening every Tuesday night. I'll be announcing it later. Just wondered if you'd. Yeah, it's you know, they do every front of City Hall every Tuesday night.
Oh, okay.
They try to, say, end the sleeping ban, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I just got back into town about 4 months ago, so I've been out of the picture for about 4 years in this area, so I don't know what's new or what's, you know, changed or anything, you know, for the most part.
We've been talking with?
Thomas.
Thank you, man.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Say it again.
There's all kind of crazy shit going on. Nothing to report.
Thank you. Any street reports?
What was that, sir?
Any reports from the street?
No. No public housing, because they won't just mess produce everything already, because they want to be greedy.
That's true.
You know, it would take 3 years to fix this planet. And then they don't know how to fix it because they're stupid. They want to fight and kill people. What's their plans after that? Nothing. Nothing. They have no plans. None of them. Gold's a bad metal. Diamonds a stupid rock. Shit has no value. So what's the king that there was tulip bulbs as currency? He said, what the fuck is tulip bulbs? I ain't accept this. Boom, their currency was dead. It's bullshit currency. Based on nothing.
And we've been talking with?
No public housing. Bullshit.
Thank you, man.
All right.
Any reports from the street? Any street reports for free radio?
I just got to Santa Cruz.
Welcome to town. Stay dry.
Thanks.
If words could help. Any free reports, Dreamcatcher?
Yeah, they took my stuff on Monday, and I went to go get it on Tuesday, and they said I got to have the officer that put my trailer in the truck to come with me to identify it. I think that's ridiculous. And they knew a storm was coming. I was down there on time.
You're talking about a week ago?
Yeah. I'm talking about last week, this week. You know? What a joke.
And what happened? Did you go back on? Did you ever get your stuff?
No, they wouldn't give it to me unless I had the officer that was in charge that put it in the truck give it back to me. Isn't that a joke? They know it's my trailer.
It sounds like a form of punishment.
I can identify everything in that trailer. How can I give my ID when my ID is in the trailer?
It sounds like they're trying to intimidate you into either laying lower or getting out of town or
well,
I don't know what.
We had problems. You see, I was in the same place where there was problems.
And this, to me, just is a signal example of incredibly arbitrary behavior against someone, Dreamcatcher, who really has gone out of his way to be cooperative with police, too much so, to my money. I mean, he was a regular participant and still is, in a way, with the homeless freedom sleeper movement. But he was told by the police that they would not bother him if he slept across the street on Tuesday night when the Freedom Sleepers were there. He agreed to do that and apparently had been doing it, although he was spending time. He was at the last Freedom Sleeper event because this conversation we had was the Monday before, well, last Monday before last Tuesday when Freedom Sleepout 85 happened, and he still hadn't been able to pick up his stuff from the Rangers. You're not allowed, and from the police department where the Rangers leave the stuff that they seize and take away from people. The police department, as regular listeners know, perhaps, is open only 4 hours a week for property retrieval. That's Thursdays from 12:30 to 2:30. And Dreamcatcher has had his property taken in the past and retrieved it. This time they're telling him that they can't get it because he has to show ID and he also has to have the person who picked it up identify it. Maybe the first condition is because he doesn't have his ID, but the ID, he says, is with his stuff. And it seems to me a relatively simple matter to go and he can direct them as to where in his stuff the ID would be. They can pull it out, look at it, determine that in fact it is him, although they probably know him anyway. And so they're simply being bureaucratic or punitive or both. And it's an example of, to me, the kind of abuses that happen when people with guns and money and a license to harass are given these powers and also told to enforce a code which criminalizes the poor in order to drive them away and out of sight and essentially keep other people who are also poor but not quite on the streets working out of fear they'll get poorer and go on the streets. Let's hear more.
Right, it wasn't the problem. It was on the wall, and these people, you know, pissing their pisses and smoking that foil out in the open. If I catch that again, I'm going to go up and check it, because that's what got my stuff taken away, is because of these couple of people that we know.
The name of the officer who took your stuff?
I don't know. I'm trying to find that out. I might find it out tomorrow when I'm in the position to go get picked up by the officer and to go down there with him and get it. I'll be at the city hall.
Tuesday when that you can do that.
Yeah,
Tuesday
that'll be tomorrow. That'll be tomorrow.
And when tomorrow came, that is the next day, Tuesday, and I went back and interviewed him again. I think that may be coming up as part of the interview. He said he'd waited all day, and the Parks and Rec guy had never shown up to go with him to the police department so he could pick up his goods, his stuff, his, I don't know exactly what it was, but his bike trailer, maybe his artwork. He's an artist, and also I might imagine his survival gear, though when I saw him last night, he was under some kind of a blanket, so maybe he either got some new survival gear, or maybe they didn't take it, but by what he told me, he had, by that time, by early evening, Tuesday the next day, he still hadn't been able to retrieve his property. And those who had told him they were going to help him, those officials who said they were coming to be of assistance, because it was required that he have someone who to assist him in that way before he could pick up his property, which is a bunch of horse shit, frankly. It isn't the policy, as far as I know, hadn't shown up.
Is this going to discourage you from coming to the Freedom Sleeper event?
No. I don't have to sleep there. They came in during the day when I was trying to get my... Never mind. I don't care about my personal life. It doesn't matter.
But they didn't treat you with the greatest respect, in other words.
Well, they didn't have to take my stuff at all. It was neatly in a neat place. It was all covered, and it had nothing to do with what the problem was and the call that came. I know this. I don't know what else to say.
Well, I know that you're obviously not happy, and usually you're pretty...
I've been cold and miserable.
Yeah.
They have all my gear. They have all my food. What the hell, man? What the fuck?
I hear you. And we have been talking with...
Dreamcatcher.
Thank you, Dreamcatcher.
You're welcome.
Sorry to... I mean, thank you for telling me about this stuff.
I've had food poisoning. I've had food poisoning. I've had no way to take care of myself. I had no way to clean up myself. What is this? I was there on time to get my stuff back. They know it's my trailer. They've had it there several times. And the little girl that was there was given instructions not to give it back to me. I know that. Of course, I didn't have the officer right there. I couldn't get him that day.
I'm not aware that's ever been asked anybody I know of.
Yeah, everybody else was getting their stuff back when they had their... I don't have no citation. They're supposed to give us a day, 24-hour notice before they take our stuff. What was all this? They come when they know there's no cameras there to catch them in their act. They come during the day, you know, when people are busy and other people are guarding. I had a guard on myself. I had somebody that was willing to move my stuff onto the sidewalk, and they would not allow it. He said, no, that's Dreamcatcher stuff. You can't touch it. What do you mean? I had somebody there to move my stuff if it was...
It was in their custody. The custody of the person that you left to...
Right, it was. And they wouldn't let him. But Blue isn't the best guy to have in charge of your custody when he starts yelling and cussing at the cops.
I can appreciate that.
So, you know, they didn't allow him to have it. He caused too much problems to get my stuff, I guess. I don't know. I wasn't there.
Trying to make rational sense out of something that's probably just arbitrary. I don't know.
I'm trying to give somebody the benefit of the doubt.
Well, I almost rarely give the police the benefit of the doubt. I think they should be better at what they do.
Well, I got some friends on with the Rangers. They're, none of them are my enemies, really, except the guy with the clipboard. But I got to apologize to him. You know, I will if I get a chance. I had a dream that I did already. I already thought I did.
You are the Dreamcatcher.
Yes, I am.
Let's get back to eat. I'll talk to you again. Thanks for coming.
Dreamcatcher, yes, that's me.
Thank you. Any street reports?
It's rough today, Santa Cruz.
What's your name?
My name's Greg Smith. I haven't really been through here since I've been to Santa Cruz, but I've been through it in a few other cities too. And the one that really topped it all was I got sent to Dominican after having a seizure at the homeless shelter. I got sent to Dominican, and they decided that I was an intravenous needle user. I did drugs intravenously. And not me, not my whole lifetime. And I can't get it wiped off my record.
When was this?
This has been 4 years ago, 3.5 years ago. And I don't know what to do about it. Because it's just not me. I grew up around a lot of needle users, and I just don't do that.
And we've been talking with?
Gregory Smith.
Thanks, Gregory. Should be on free radio on Thursday night.
Just for anybody camping outdoors, stay away from the rivers and water flows, because there's flash flood warnings.
And we've been talking with?
Dharma.
Thanks, Dharma.
Yep.
Any street reports?
No, thanks.
All right. Any street reports?
Huh?
Any reports from the street for free radio?
Yes, we are very tired of this weather.
And wet. But that's a great hat you got there.
Yeah, out of all this, I did get blessed with this beautiful hat.
And what is your name?
Kathy.
And Kathy, anything else happening out there except the weary weather or the weary wet weather?
Well, everybody's trying to work together to get through this best we can and trying to help one another instead of hurt.
Thank you, Kathy.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Any street reports, guys?
It's wet.
True. And miserable. Any hassles from the... How about the guys with the guns and the badges? Any hassles?
Yeah. Always.
Anything in the last 24 hours?
No.
Because that's good news.
Under the radar.
Here, here. Thank you both.
Yeah. I'm not committing crimes.
You ordered some food? Sleeping is a crime in Santa Cruz.
That's what they seem to say.
Yeah. I haven't said this in a long, long time. Naomi comes every morning at AA. I've been in love with her for 6 years. You know, I'm getting very... I want to marry her. I'm totally in love with her. She's the sweetest woman I've ever met in my life.
Well, I wish you luck with that, Steve.
And now it's gonna be coming on soon, so quiet down a little bit, please.
Hey, announcement! Announcement! This is the same announcement you'll usually hear every week when I'm here, if I've got enough wind to do it. There is a Freedom Sleep Out in front of City Hall tomorrow night. That's number 85, where there'll be some food, not as much as here, and some coffee, and it goes all night. Last time, warning, the police did show up. They only took away one person, and they didn't ticket anyone else, but it is a protest against the sleeping ban. A law that makes it illegal for everybody to sleep after 11, whether in your car or outside. So if you're interested, City Hall tomorrow, on the sidewalk or under the eaves of the building. That probably starts around 4 o'clock at night. And it goes till the next morning, about 9. That's in front of City Hall. It's Freedom Sleep Out 85. One last question. Has anybody been rousted from out into the rain in the last 2 or 3 days? Raise your hand if you've been rousted into the rain.
Every day. Every night.
All right. Thank you. I count at least 5 or 6 people that's happened to.
Okay. So I'm talking to a man who's on the board of the winter shelter, talking about the difficulties that the shelter program has. One of the problems you were mentioning is that you got into a situation where there was already a transportation system, sort of, not the best kind set up, right?
Well, the Association of Faith Communities began the operation of the winter shelter with very little time to do advanced preparation, so we had to put a lot of the systems in that were in place last year at the Armory. But moving away from the Armory meant we didn't have a comparable site. We had to have 2 sites. But we used the same basic mode of providing transportation as last time. They picked up at Harvey West at the HSC last year. This year we weren't able to do that, so we have to pick up on North River Street.
Why couldn't you do it this year, as far as I know?
We were not allowed to pick up there.
Who banned you from picking
up?
Well,
I wasn't part of those discussions. My understanding is HSC wasn't willing to have us pick up there, and the city didn't want it there. The city didn't want us to pick up downtown, so we wound up having to pick up on North River Street.
Perhaps in Gilroy somewhere.
North River Street, which is on the way to Felton. It's the last lot
after you leave town.
Well,
you're just training people to get out of town.
To the degree that there are people living in the woods in that area, it would be very convenient for them. But for people in the downtown area, it means they have to walk all the way north.
But they didn't poll the people to see who would be most convenient.
I don't know what their criteria is, but I didn't notice any poll takers downtown.
There's a bunch of poll cats running the situation.
Well, there are people of goodwill running the situation. It's just I think we need to do better long-term planning next year, too. If we do it again next year as a winter winter shelter. Personally, I'd like to see an all-year shelter rather than a winter shelter.
Yeah,
but
we're talking also for essentially a little more than a handful, but not a hell of a lot of it. Not certainly not a majority or even a plurality of the homeless population that are getting into this so-called shelter program. It is a shelter program. There is also something you should be aware of, and you probably know about, that out at the river, Coral, Fern, and Limekiln streets now have 24-hour bans on parking. Unless you have a permit, you can't get a permit unless you live there or associated with a business. So this was something that was passed 2 years ago, but was not signs did not appear until the last couple of months or so. Maybe it's connected with this decision not to allow people to, you know, be picked up at the homeless, what I call the homeless lack of services center out at 115 Coral Street.
Well, again, I know nothing about that at all. But
yeah,
you'll
see it as you roll through those streets. It's now... Now this is beginning to spread. It started over on Washington Street where there are 24-hour parking bans. That's now gone out to Limekiln and Coral and Fern. So.
Well, we're seeing throughout the community more and more parking zones where you have to have some business or residence in a neighborhood before you can park there. That's happening.
The attempt to ban RVs citywide that Rochelle Naroyan pushed 2 years ago and has been held back by the Coastal Commission. Now, the county ban on RVs was passed in March by the supervisors, and that has been held a bit by the again by the Coastal Commission staff, where it's been limited to, I think, four-hour bans. But a 24-hour ban where homeless people are seems to me to be particularly cruel, particularly targeted, and particularly abusive. But that's just my view.
Well, my view is that what we need in this community is to take care of those people who are living in their cars by providing a site where it's safe and legal to do that, along with restroom facilities and other amenities. And I think the community does have the resources to do that. There's no infrastructure needed. We just needed to have a safe parking area that can be properly supervised.
And who can dispute you? Hey, Steve. Anything coming up?
No.
Steve isn't telling us the truth. He's just too restless to talk to us. He shakes his head with a smile. So, we've been talking with
Scott Galloway.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you, Robert.
There were 62 sign-ins tonight for the meal, and I was going to ask Steve, was the shelter full?
Thank you, Robert.
Steve, was the shelter full last night?
I wasn't there last night.
How about the last time you were there?
Yes, well, 90%.
Okay. Thank you, man.
And those were interviews from the Red Church a few days ago, Monday the 20th? Yeah, I guess it was the 20th. You tuned to the stream of free radio at freakradio.org. This is the last live show until we get another studio from me anyway, but... stay tuned. I should be hoping to put on at least some exciting flashback shows, or at least some flashback shows which I hope are exciting. And I will be putting out news of that on the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom email list, in case you want to know more about that. If you want to be a regular subscriber, it costs nothing. Just send me an email at rnorse3, R-N-O-R-S-E-3, at hotmail.com, and I will put you on. So, I think we have one last round of interviews, but I'm also going to read something that kind of, well, it got me, it's part of a continuing debate I'm having within myself about issues around, I'm not going to have time to do that, around the free speech issue up in Berkeley when... the speaker was essentially had his, I guess it was Milo Yiannopoulos. I often get his name wrong. He was essentially an angry crowd of 1,500 people shut down his speech, and there was a lot of criticism of that as being an attack on free speech, and I was sympathetic to that criticism as I read it. And yet I was trying to understand the other side because the people there were, I wanted to present their perspective. And I think I'm going to try to do that, if I can, in the next show. Well, why don't I just try and start it now? There were a series of editorials in the Daily Cal newspaper, which is the university's student newspaper, and defending the tactics of the protesters. But one of the claims made by those who shut down the speech of Milo Yiannopoulos, that's how you pronounce his name, I think, and his so-called dangerous faggot tour, had to do with his previous appearances, and one particular appearance at the University of Wisconsin in Milwaukee. I'm going to read a story about that and a passionate response to his outing of a transsexual person that frightened that person severely. The person was in the audience when, Milo Yiannopoulos actually showed pictures of the person, mocked the person, and it seemed to go beyond any kind of, groundbreaking, tradition-breaking, taboo-breaking free speech. I don't have a copy of the speech, but I'm going to read a little bit about this story. Here is the story again. It's titled "Hate's Insidious Face: You, University of Wisconsin Milwaukee, and the Alt-Right," and it's December 14th of last year. Last night, Milo Yiannopoulos' dangerous faggot tour came to UW-Milwaukee, hosted by a student front group also responsible for the somewhat lame exercise in neo-McCarthyism, the Professor Watch List. For over a month, faculty, staff, and students have been expressing concern about the known dynamics of Milo Y, a kind of sly and slick performance of white grievance against political correctness, immigrant and Muslim communities, as well as LGBT campus presence in politics. The administration, quivering in fear of their right-wing legislative budget lords' threats of defunding, generally evaded the issue of the impact of hate speech to vulnerable communities, though subsequently released tepid but earnest statements regarding freedom of speech and their inability to control the sponsorship of student groups with the intent to disassociate the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee brand with a known hate monger and white supremacist such as Mr. Y. And my concern was to hear specifically how Y was the hate monger. Cautious hand-wringing has generally been the operative dynamic at play within the crumbling institution. Concerned students and workers planned and mounted a solid counter-protest. We marched, disrupted the jubilee of white resentment, conducted an alternate open mic event near the heavily policed second floor of the student union, and held light panels that proclaimed deny hate. Our struggling union, AFT 3535, bought pizza for the counter-protesters, and the energy was celebratory, aggressive, and peaceful. And I'm trying to follow the story here. There was a full house for Milo Yiannopoulos, and his one-hour stand-up game of hate charades was live cast on Breitbart News. At 49 minutes into his shtick, Milo projected a picture of a UWM trans student who was undergoing conversion and outed them for making an issue of bathroom access. Bathrooms, right? What an outrage. Milo went on to suggest his own interest in having sex with the student, all while assessing them critically in very specific and demeaning ways. The student's name was prominently displayed, and everyone laughed. For over a month, many of us have expressed our concern about the inevitability of this kind of violence toward our students. This is what Milo is known for, and this is where the framing of free speech and academic diversity has been, to some of us, quite hollow, or to be more generous, extremely complex in its concrete implications for the safety of our students. Immediately following the event, Chancellor Mohn released an email to the entire campus where he expressed that "I will not stand silently by when a member of our campus community is personally and wrongly attacked." He goes on to say that "I am disappointed that this speaker chose to attack a transgender student." But this is what Milo does. This is how he made a name for himself with a shit fest known as Gamergate. This is why he was kicked off Twitter. This is what he does in his insidiously amoral, stand-up, comedically clever campus tour. How does Chancellor Mohn's refusal to stand silently translate into anything other than a vague disappointment that Milo did such a heinous and harmful thing to a specific person while broadcast live to a massive national audience known for a propensity toward vicious trolling and specific harassment. The student in question sent out a blistering email to multiple faculty and staff after reading Chancellor Mohn's statement. It is long, it is scathing, it is angry and hurt and dismayed and weary and fed up. It is unedited except for the redacting of her name. It is worth reading, and here is the statement. Chancellor Mark Mohn, go fuck yourself. I am the trans student that was attacked, and your email is nothing short of insulting. I wasn't going to write this email at first, even after Milo attacked me, but then I saw your email, and I am so fucking sick of your goddamn lip service. Seriously, go fuck yourself. Your email? I don't even know where to begin. Also, I don't care if you feel offended or harassed. Welcome to my life. Sue me. I'd be more than happy to defend my free speech in court, since this is what you call it, apparently, to lambaste your ass for being an ungodly, fucking pathetic, quote, ally. And quite frankly, I don't care who the fuck reads this email, as you can tell by the CC, and what people think of me. I'm aware of where this email can end up. So be it. My give-a-fuck card was thrown out the window a long time ago. I'm going to write about you and your fucked-up bullshit. Your words, I also will not stand silently by when a member of our campus community is personally and wrongly attacked. That is probably the biggest piece of goddamn fucking bullshit I have ever read. What exactly do you plan to do? Oh, yeah, nothing. Because you're a cowardly piece of shit. Your not standing silently apparently consists of a single email mass sent to the university. That's it. You don't give a fucking cookie for that. What else were you going to do? Nothing. You were planning on doing jack shit. Did you even attempt to reach out to me? Nope. Not even an email. Nothing. Instead, it was supposed to suffice to just send a nice little bit of polished hogwash to the general campus. Is that right? Were you trying to head off student protests calling for you to be sacked or something? You'd like nothing better for this to blow over. Seriously, what the hell are you even doing right now? You say you're not standing by silently. Bull fucking shit, you pompous asshole. Yes, you are. Don't act like you didn't know this would happen. You knew goddamn well it would. I lost track of how many people pointed this out to you. And what the hell did you do when students tried to organize and deliver a petition to cancel Milo's event? You fucking called the cops on them. Like, what in living fuck? Your asshole level is off the charts, especially because you feign concern about this with one hand while backhanding all of us with the other, because there's nothing like the threat of state violence to keep people in line. Seriously, you fucking called the goddamn police on students at your office who were raising extremely valid concerns about Milo. You forcibly threw students out, and then you want to turn around and act like you didn't see this coming? How fucking naive do you think we are? This also isn't just a case of a speaker going off on a tangent like that, like some random occurrence. It was not a case where you had no way of knowing he would do this. Quite the contrary, Milo has a supremely extensive, highly documented track record of doing precisely this. As I've already told you, you knew this would happen, we told you it would, and we told you again and again. But you brushed this off under the free speech bullshit. Do tell me. And again, I want to remind listeners, this is the response of the student who was outed and pilloried by Milo at this Wisconsin University speaking event in December, which led later to the February, actually it was late January, somewhere in there, 1,500 students at UCB shutting down his event. And the person continues, do tell me, if someone invited a fucking modern Hitler to campus, would you allow that? Because that's what your bullshit argument says. How about David Duke at the KKK? Can we invite him? Or how about Andrew Anglin, the self-proclaimed Nazi who runs the Daily Stormer website? Yes, he is an actual Nazi. That is not hyperbole. Can we invite him? Genuine question. You've already allowed a fascist on campus, so can we invite a full-fledged Nazi? Are there no bounds? Maybe you should invite a radical who advocates burning down Chapman Hall because speakers like that can be found. And no, me typing that sentence is not a threat to destroy property. Words don't hurt anyone, as the fascist you defended last night would say. Free speech does not cover harassment, and that's exactly what Milo did to me. But hey, to email about hashtagging UWM stand together, as if that was fucking accomplish anything. That was the hashtag that the, apparently the chancellor sent out. Damn you fucking liberals, really drive me up the wall. Now you can spend all of 10 seconds making some half-assed tweet, give it a cute hashtag, and go about your day feeling like you did something. No, you don't get credit for that. You accomplished nothing. You're as embarrassing as the people who wear a safety pin and think that counts as being an ally, patting yourself on the back for a job well done, all while you stand silent as fascists attack your students. Some ally. Or making a hashtag that virtually nobody in the city will see and which will do abso-fucking-lutely nothing. Good grief, UWM stands together as you fucking call the police on students who tried to petition you, as you divide and attack marginalized students, while saying you want unity, as you allow fascists to use free speech as a pretense to harass and attack. The amount of doublethink here is just incredible. And we're supposed to respond with positive messages, not anger? What fucking world do you live in? Do you have any idea how much fucking privilege you have to begin, even begin saying something like that? What the fuck? You do not get to dictate how we feel. You do not get to tell us what our emotions should be. Okay. Oh, but okay, here's a positive message. Nobody died. Woo fucking who? Positivity. Go Panthers. Fuck no. I am done getting repeatedly abused and shit on, and expected to just take it and not be angry. But don't worry, I'm not angry. I'm way, way beyond that. I'm so fucking done having to justify my humanity to shitheads like you all the fucking time. Angry bitches get shit done. You say to not respond with anger? Goddamn, you haven't the slightest fucking clue what pervasive marginalization is like. Do you even know what Milo said about me? Do you, asshole? Here, I'll type a bit out for you, because I highly doubt you actually know what that fascist said about me from his podium in front of hundreds of people and live-streamed on Breitbart in front of thousands. Milo just finished. Here he quotes what Milo said. Milo just finished mocking feminists who critique the very harmful phrase, man up. And Milo says, I'll tell you one University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee student that does not need to man up, and that is, and he gives the student's name. Milo puts an image of me taken from last spring when I was earlier in my transition and appeared significantly more masculine on the main screen. Do you know about the student's name? Have any of you come into contact with this person? And this is Milo speaking. This quote-unquote non-binary trans, you're not laughing now, are you? You know him. This quote-unquote non-binary trans woman forced his way into the women's locker rooms this year. Who knows about this story? Any of you? Milo looks around. People laugh. I see you don't even read your own student media. You got into the women's room the way liberals always operate, using the government and the courts to weasel their way in where they don't belong. In this case, he made a Title IX complaint. Title IX is a set of rules to protect women on campus effectively. It's couched in the language of equality, but it's really about women, which under normal circumstances would be fine, except for how it's implemented. Now it's used to put men into women's bathrooms. I have known some passing trannies in my life. Trannies. You're not supposed to allowed to say that. I've known some passing trannies, which is to say transgender people who pass as the gender they would like to be considered. Then Milo directs the audience's attention to the image of me. Well, no. Audience laughs. The way you know he's failing is I'd still almost bang him. That's Milo again. Audience begins laughing a lot, keeps laughing. Milo says, it's just a man in a dress, isn't it? I should reapply my lipstick. And this is, again, now here's the person who Milo was attacking, continuing with what they were saying before. And all you can say is you're disappointed? He attacked me? Disappointed? Are you fucking kidding me? How about enraged or infuriated? What the fuck is the use of disappointed? Tranny is the equivalent of faggot, and you're disappointed? Really? Really? You fucking think? God damn, oh, but you condemn it. Oh, okay, that forgives everything. Not. You. I would not deprive students of our community or opportunities to hear diverse viewpoints. Translation. I would never deprive students of the ability to collectively harass and verbally assault another student because it's free speech. I was at Milo's event. You have no fucking idea what that was like. No fucking idea. I knew this event would bring out all the worst people on campus, but I wasn't going to let that stop me. Standing in line was bad enough. Luckily, at this point in my life, I look substantially more feminine than I did last spring when almost everyone perceived me as a boy in girls' clothes. And I'm correctly gendered as a woman probably 90% of the time now. Anyway, I'm in line waiting, and in front of me, two dudes are making hateful comments about trans folk. Yet 10 minutes after that, one of them was looking at my chest, checking me out. In my mind, the only thing I'm thinking is, if this person knew he was sexually attracted to a trans girl, holy shit. Because asshole boys like him tend to get extremely aggressive if they realize a girl they found attractive has a penis. But that was still bearable, and I was prepared in case they realized I'm trans. Thankfully, they didn't. I also knew Milo was going to regurgitate a profound amount of racist and transphobic hate